Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Well, Jeff, Monday Night Raw headlines with Cody Rhodes, Shinsuke Nakamura, a street fight. Feels kind of like a match made to blow off a feud. And they gave them plenty of time to just tell a really nice story. Cody winning clean, as you'd expect him to at this stage, in 24 minutes. But we had tables and chairs and candlesticks, I think a broom in there somewhere. And it was just a really good TV win for Cody. It's just solid. It's a solid booking scheme where it's a secondary feud for Cody. They built up Nakamura in a way that I didn't know was possible. Just a few months ago, to be a credible, compelling opponent for Cody. You kind of know Cody's going to win, but the journey's been fun. And the image of Cody winning, celebrating, it's just straightforward. Babyface overcomes a heel threat, and now he's moving on to bigger and better things, which, of course, is, as Cole talked about, finishing his story or taking the next step to finishing his story this year at the Royal Rumble after failing to do so last year. Just thought it was good, solid WWE storytelling with, fortunately, a really good match as part of it. Your thoughts on tonight's Raw main event?
Yeah, the feud between Nakamura and Cody has not been my favorite. I know I talked about that once before we were on here, and it's largely for some of the reasons you said, just that it is predictable. You know this isn't Nakamura's feud to win. And so that's kind of taken a little bit off of it for me. But then they keep having these confrontations and then this match tonight on TV, and it's still fun to watch. There were a lot of great spots in that match. One problem I guess I have is I am conditioned at this point to think that any match that involves a table is immediately over once someone goes through that table.
Oh.
So there were two or three spots in this match where I was like, oh, wow, it's over. And no, it's not over yet. But yes, I agree with a lot of your sentiments there. I thought it was a really fun match to watch. It was a lot of time. They first announced it was up next, I think, at like 10:20. So
yes,
I thought it was going to be even longer. But yeah, 24 minutes was a fair amount of time. And I'm ready for this one to be over. I'm ready for Cody to move on to the next thing. And now we shift gears towards the Royal Rumble and ultimately WrestleMania.
Yeah, and I have no problem with at all with a feud that isn't a PLE, pay-per-view level, main event feud, even with a main event wrestler like Cody. I think this was a good use of filling time. They elevated it to a level, like I said, I didn't anticipate they could with the vignettes. I thought the kind of graphic novel imagery was great. I thought Nakamura's promo was really innovative. He was sinister. I thought he was credible as you can imagine him being against Cody, because in a meta sense, most fans know Cody's not going to lose to Shinsuke. He's going to win, and this is just filling time. If people think that hard about it, I don't know that everybody watching is thinking that hard about it. I think, you can look at fans in the crowd. They get wrapped up in the action, although some are just obsessed with tables, which backfired on their favorite Cody. And that's a little eye-rolling how obsessed fans get with tables sometimes. Just enjoy the match. But I like this because it's not a squash match, obviously, but squash matches used to be a format in the days when TV were loss leaders, not primary revenue generators, as they are now and still are, despite social media, views for The Rock. WWE still makes the lion's share of their revenue from good old school cable TV deals and broadcast deals, and that's going to be the case for a little while longer here at least. But they used to do squash matches, and it was just a chance to show off wrestlers' finishers, give fans a feel-good win, or see a heel use cheating tactics, or not even cheat, just be unlikable and cocky and in their victory and create a sense of a threat. And this was kind of the modern day equivalent of it. Cody's going to win, but they've got to fill 3 hours of Raw, 2 hours of SmackDown. You're going to get a longer match. You're going to get vignettes. It gets stretched out. But it more than anything was a showcase for Cody to be Cody, to be in jeopardy, fire, to show concern. Cody's, I say gimmick, but I think he's like this in real life too. The common guy is his concern. And when the timekeeper at ringside got sprayed with mist, Cody turns his back from the match. He's like, let's get some help. Are you okay? And that was a turning point in the match. Cody gives a belt to a kid in the front row. The kid is super happy. I think he should go in the crowd and give it to some kids who can't afford front row seats. But that's a whole other story. I guess there's perks to being in the front row. But that's Cody's thing, you know? I mean, he's giving belts to kids. He's worried about the workers. And then he goes out and he hits some of his signature moves and gets a win. That's sort of the modern-day equivalent of what a squash match back in the day would accomplish when whoever would come out and win a match against a jobber. It gives you this chance to have a Cody Rhodes experience and imagine him then taking what we saw tonight, applying it to the Rumble and eventually WrestleMania. And, you know, I think a lot of fans want it to be Roman Reigns and Cody winning. So this just served its purpose well. It didn't have to be match of the year, but they certainly didn't, like, downshift their effort. This felt like a match where they knew they were given plenty of time to tell a good long story, and they worked hard, and they had the fans engaged, and they had, you know, millions of people watching. So I think this approach is successful. I don't think every feud has to be held to the standard of, we'll talk about it, the CM Punk Drew McIntyre segment, where it's like, ooh, it's new and fresh, we don't know where it's going. We kind of knew where this was going, but the ride was fun.
Yeah, I like that context, looking at it as a kind of a modern version of a squash. I feel bad for the character of Shinsuke Nakamura. I mean, he tries so hard. He puts months of effort into these sadistic mental games and makes his opponents wait, even though they want to kill him, and then he finally gets them right where he wants them, and, you know, he continues to fail in that regard. I think more so than Cody, honestly, I'm interested in seeing where Nakamura goes from here too.
Yeah.
I think the Seth program and more so the Cody program, with, like you said, with the anime graphics and the poison mist and all these different elements that have gone into building him up now, even though he hasn't been successful in either of those feuds, we are now left with this character. So I think there's more room for him to go somewhere too. I think that's going to be just as interesting as seeing what happens with Cody, because we kind of know more or less where he's headed.
Yeah, I didn't think that Nakamura would lose a feud to Cody, and we'd be saying, I'm curious what's next for Nakamura. He lost a feud, but he's still at a higher level than he was 6 months ago. And I do think he's a useful, I mean, it sounds almost patronizing, Nakamura, you're useful, but, like, he loses a feud, but he can still be useful in terms of elevating some other babyface. And I haven't, like, looked at the roster or imagined where he'll go from here, but I do think the next person who feuds with him, who's not at the level of Cody, is going to have a good feud, and it can, you know, it can turn into some good matches. And, you know, I am curious how he deals with all the mind games he played with Cody and coming up short. What story do they tell with Nakamura's character in terms of how he responds to what happened tonight and in coming up short in this feud with Cody? And it does seem like, you know, it's time to move on. Then it's possible he'll enter the Rumble and say, I'm going to aim to eliminate Cody, and the feud's really not over in that sense. But there'll be a satisfying moment when Cody throws Nakamura over the top rope, and then maybe that will be kind of the door closing on it.
Yeah. I do hope it's whatever he moves on to, it's something that where he maintains this persona that they put so much time and effort into. And it's not, you know, he's not suddenly questioning himself and his motives and, you know, ends up ultimately turning babyface right away. I would like to see him continue with this.
Yeah. And obviously they're up against college football championship tonight. And they didn't, this show wasn't phoned in. I think WWE is pretty good about just putting on the show that you think they would put on regardless of what the competition is. And I think that's kind of the place they're at now. And it makes sense. You know, we're not going to, they're not going to get obsessed with, the micro, aspect of counter-programming things, because I just think you're not going to have a lot of success trying to load up a show against something that, like a college football championship that they're going up against now in early January on Monday nights. But it was a good show, I thought, you know, overall, for just a, you know, we're regular Raw. We didn't have a surprise from Rock. We're still kind of coming down from that. It's not the final week before the Rumble or the first Raw afterwards. Those are peak moments. But I thought there was enough news value on the show, and I thought the 3 hours moved by nicely. How did you feel about the kind of the overall pace of things?
I liked it. I liked it quite a bit. I liked the I thought the opening with Drew was fresh, the kind of a cold open, And there were a number of moments on the show that had me surprised and had me excited to see what was going to happen. You know, when Punk got involved with Drew, when Rhea Ripley came out for Nia Jax, and really surprisingly, the ending of the Kofi Kaiser match. I mean, we'll get into all those things, of course, but those were just a few of the things that that really caught me and had me going, hey, you know, this is really interesting. This is fun.
Yeah, yeah. So you just kind of touched on a few things. We'll expand on that are I think, worth talking about and qualify mostly as good or compelling segments. With that said, let's pause and formally introduce ourselves and give out the phone number and email so we can move forward with the show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, January 8th, 2024. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, the website pwtorch.com, and the host of various podcasts, including this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, which follows Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision, and then also the host of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, our Blue Logo Show, that is features our weekly flagship and also some best of shows and some interviews and other formats. So subscribe to both if you haven't yet. Search Wade Keller on your podcast app and subscribe for free. You can also search PW Torch on your podcast app and sign up for free to our PW Torch Daily Cast, which has a different show each day of the week with a different theme. And then also you'll see our charcoal-colored PW Torch VIP logo that'll give you free samples of VIP podcasts. I believe we put up part of last week's Six with Todd Martin last Thursday on that feed. So if you aren't a VIP member and you want to catch our show from last week or part of it from last week, check that out. And then you can also upgrade within that app if you're using the native Apple Podcast app and get all the VIP shows with the exclusive shows that are VIP exclusive, plus also the VIP versions of our free shows where the ads and plugs are removed. So some good perks there. It's pretty streamlined. Frictionless sign-up process using your Apple and iPhone or your Apple account on your iPhone. Also, by the way, you can sign up for VIP membership through Patreon, and then Patreon now works on Spotify. So if you are a Spotify user and you want to get our VIP podcasts, including, like I said, the versions of this show without the ad and commercial break interruptions, you can now listen on Spotify by signing up for a membership through Patreon. Full information on going VIP is at pwtorch.com/govip. You can also just sign up with a credit card or debit card through our main site or PayPal and get a VIP membership that way. But we are here to talk Raw, and the other voice you hear is Jeff Rush. He is a pwtorch.com contributor. Jeff, good to talk to you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Wade. Thank you for having me back on again. I didn't quite get a Rock episode, but I think we did pretty good for ourselves, all things considered.
Yes, yes. I mean, when they don't advertise, you never know what you're going to get. And sometimes you get Rock, and sometimes – what was the biggest surprise on this show?
Well, they did advertise a CM Punk appearance tonight in advance.
Yep.
And you got to kind of wonder how that would have gone down if he hadn't gotten mad at Drew at the beginning of the show, because that was kind of it for him. He came out and did his thing. And
that's true, yeah. You
know, I don't know, maybe he was initially planned for the 9 o'clock hour or however that was supposed to work.
Yeah, we try not to think too hard about that stuff. Yeah. But I mean, I guess it's plausible Punk was going to cut a promo. And then, you know, if you pretend it's all real, Adam Pearce is like, man, that took a lot longer than we thought. Punk, you got it out of your system. We're going to cancel your segment later and instead, try to fit all the matches in. I guess you can imagine that. It'd be kind of fun if, you know, Michael Cole said, you know, Punk was going to come out later, but because of what happened earlier, Pearce has said too much time is eaten up. We have too many matches scheduled. I don't know. I don't know if this was the time to do it.
Yeah.
But every once in a while, it'd be kind of fun for them to, you know, make it seem like, yeah, we have a format sheet, but it doesn't always go as planned, and almost acknowledge that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think as surprises go, I liked the shout-out to the Straight Edge Society.
That's right.
Underrated portion of CM Punk's career in WWE, and I didn't think we'd be talking about it at all tonight. So that was fun.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So, Jeff, tell people about your column that you write for pwtorch.com, and it's a unique format, you'll have another one coming up this week.
Yeah, so I do a weekly column on the Torch called Rocket Straps. It focuses on a deciphering of which wrestlers WWE is prioritizing the most in a given week, which fans out to cover a longer period as we go and creates a bigger picture look at the company's booking priorities. from looking at basic things like who's holding championship gold and picking up TV and PLE wins to slightly more under-the-radar components like which wrestlers are featured in the official previews for each show and who wrestles in matches substantial enough to require one or multiple ad breaks, to more big-picture metrics like merchandise sales and quarter-hour ratings. So I've been tracking the shows beginning with SmackDown each week and ending with Raw, but WWE did the whole New Year's week last week, and I felt it made more sense to track priority of both Raw and SmackDown from that week. The quarter-hour ratings for SmackDown didn't come out until earlier today, so I haven't gotten a chance to finish the tally just yet, but that should be wrapped up tomorrow and on the site shortly thereafter. It's been fascinating for me personally to see who comes out where each week, and I hope Torch readers are enjoying it as well.
Very good. Let me give out our phone number and our email as we continue to discuss Raw. If you want to get a call and participate in the show, we are live streaming and the phone lines are open. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And again, when you call push 1, that'll play you on the switchboard and let us know that you want to be on the show. We have a bunch of people who've called in. Nobody's pushed 1 yet. So if anyone pushes 1 or calls now, you'll be you won't have to wait long to join us in the conversation here. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Excuse me, I got that wrong. wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. Old habits die hard. We have switched to Gmail so that we actually get your emails consistently. We had some server issues with the @pwtorch email. So it is now wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. And that's another way that you can participate, even if you don't listen to our post shows live, but instead download them later at night or the next day, as the vast majority of you do. All right. So let's continue with our conversation about the show. And I want to talk about the follow-up to the Nia Jax victory over Becky Lynch last week. Clean win. This is another thing I like that they did tonight in terms of the follow-up. Becky owned the loss, compared it, framed it in a way where it's like, well, I'm not in the hospital. So, Nia gave me her best shot. She talked a big game, but here I am back and I'm ready for more. She talked about what she plans to do next. People win, people lose. That happens. We see that in sports, one-on-one and team sports. No big deal. The Super Bowl champion this year will not be undefeated. So I thought it was a really good promo. And I just thought it was a good follow-up on that. And then we had Nia Jax also bragging about what she did and talking about how she's going to move on to Rhea Ripley or Io Sky. And then Rhea Ripley came out and confronted her, and fans who have been cheering Rhea Ripley or want to be given full permission to cheer her got a chance to do that tonight, with Rhea Ripley giving everybody a little window into what she might be like as a babyface. So a lot to cover there in terms of the follow-up with Nia and Becky, but I continue to see Nia being built up strong. And I talked about this months ago when they first brought her back that, I didn't feel it was too spoilery because I wasn't given specifics because I don't like to deal in that. But I was just told, she's being brought in to be built up strong because they have a crescendo moment that's going to be meant to really help put somebody else over. And so last week, I think, was part of that. And this week was a continuation of it. So, Jeff, I'll kind of throw it to you. Talk about Becky, Nia, Rhea.
That crescendo moment, that's very interesting. They're really playing up the significance of her win over Becky. And as perhaps the only Nia Jax fan outside of San Diego, that makes me happy to see. I really like the Becky Nia Jax feud. I'd be happy if, like Becky said, this is just the beginning of what they've got going on. That said, it does also kind of feel like what we're actually looking at is maybe multiple competitors being built up as legitimate threats to win the Rumble. I would like to see a few more women get that treatment, because now right now it's like, wow, could be Becky, it could be Nia. I thought Rhea Ripley's line of Becky Lynch isn't Rhea Bloody Ripley, that had me thinking the end game here might still be what it felt like it was prior to last week, which is ultimately Rhea versus Becky at Mania. I think everything is up in the air right now. I think for a minute there, it really felt as though Nia had been defined back down again. She was lumped in with a lot of other women, with Raquel Rodriguez and several others in those multi-person matches. And she wasn't coming out on top of those. And I think that all of that came together to make her win over Becky, her clean win over Becky last week, that much more surprising. And now all of a sudden, yeah, she is this Rumble threat again. Again, I think we might be looking at Becky there, but it's not as clear as I thought maybe it was a couple of weeks ago. So
let me pause you there and have you expand on what do you think are the most likely path we're on with Rhea, Nia, and Becky? And what are like one or two, how many alternatives do you see in terms of that? Because, you know, they're going to be in Australia. Does Rhea Ripley defend against Nia Jax in Australia? Is there something at the Rumble that sets that up? Maybe Rhea eliminates Nia, Nia attacks. Well, I'm trying to think how they would tell that story. One way or the other, Nia comes up short. Becky eliminates Nia. She's enraged. But you've got to justify Nia getting a title shot against Rhea in Australia if they go that route. Well, Becky wins Rumble and then challenges the winner of that match. Something like that. What stands in the way of that? What doesn't?
Yeah.
How might you tell various scenarios in terms of trying to tie these three together at Rumble, Elimination Chamber, and Mania?
I feel as though the Royal Rumble route to WrestleMania for the women is probably going through SmackDown. I think that I think there's a storyline there with Damage Control and Bayley that makes a lot of sense, and that a path for Becky or Nia or however they go on Raw is more likely to come through Elimination Chamber, just maybe only because I don't see a storyline playing out in the chamber that would make as much sense for Bayley to come out victorious. And I think they have a lot that they could do there with her. But as far as Becky and Nia goes, I don't think Rhea Ripley is in the Rumble, correct? Like everybody's battling.
Right. And that's, yeah. I caught myself kind of thinking they probably wouldn't cross paths because she's a champion. So she wouldn't enter the Rumble.
Right. Right. But I don't think they'll just leave her off the show either. So she's going to have some sort of match on that show. Obviously both Nia and Becky are in the Rumble. I like with most things the booking is doing right now, I really don't know for sure. And that's a great place to be at. I feel like for so many years going into the Rumble season, you had a pretty darn good idea of who was coming out of each, both the men's and women's matches victorious. I think we kind of do have that with the men this year, but the women's match is, it's as up in the air as it reasonably could be, in that there are, you know, three or four, maybe five legitimate options. But yeah, I think that might be coming out of the SmackDown side more so than Raw.
Do you like how Nia Jax has been utilized so far? I mean, I've been a fan of it. We have a counterpoint in an email from Usual Suspect, which we'll get to after we kind of talk this through a little bit, then we could react more to it. I thought Nia's been strong in this role. I think her promos are good. I think her matches have been fine, if not good. And I think if they're building her up strong to have that kind of crescendo moment where someone beats her and gets elevated or overcomes an obstacle, well, it's sort of like with Nakamura, you want to build somebody up who you see ultimately as not a top-tier player consistently. But you build them up in order for them losing to a top-tier player to mean more. And I think Nia's been effective in that role so far, and I think that's the place she's in. I'll be surprised if 6 months from now she's like a champion and they're building the division around her. If they do that, I think it'll be a change of plans, and it'll be because they're really impressed with her, crowds are reacting to her more than it was the master plan or the intent in bringing her back.
And crowds really are reacting to her too. There was such a vocal backlash when she first returned. And like I mentioned a few minutes ago, I am a fan of hers. I've been a fan of this run. I liked when she first came back and was the monster destroying everyone. And I think she's got more nuance. I think having her played down a little bit from that point actually helped quite a bit. Now she's been given more nuance with this feud with Becky. And she seems to know her character very well. And she portrays it very well. She is really annoying sometimes on the mic. And I like the way she seems to have it in for Michael Cole. She's threatened him a number of times now. And it's believable. It's kind of legit. Like you could see her taking a swipe at Michael Cole, and he seems kind of, you know, uncomfortable in those moments too. I think she's been handled really well, and I could see her in a Mania match against Rhea. I don't think that's unrealistic at this point. I'm just not sure that's where they're going, but it doesn't seem unreasonable by any stretch.
Yeah. So I mentioned the email. Let's let's give Zach a chance here. Gentlemen, this is not Zach in Texas. Gentlemen, I don't get it. Nia bragging about beating Becky Lynch, someone so far above her in every metric from in-ring talent to promo skills to charisma. That was nauseating enough. Now she's being positioned. Oh, she beat her clean was nauseating enough, I see. And now she's being positioned as Rhea's opponent in Perth. Why? Doesn't matter who she's facing. Rhea's getting cheered. Call up Tiffany Stratton from NXT. She's got actual talent upside, and her ceiling isn't lower than her floor. Yeah, Nia's heat, but it's go-away heat because everyone, all caps, hates her. I don't understand this push at all, but it seems like an absolute waste to me. So Zach's been consistent in being critical and making sure to respond to any praise I give her and pushing back, and that's why we welcome calls and emails. We want different points of view. Jeff, what say you to Zach? I guess I've already sort of said what I feel about her, which I think she's done well in a row, and I don't think it's go-away heat. I mean, obviously there's some of it, but I think if it is, it is mixed in with genuine, just the kind of heel heat you want with someone, and I don't think bringing in Tiffany Stratton a rando, but I also don't think you want to bring Tiffany in to lose, like, just in that situation. Right. To me, they value Tiffany more than Nia Jax in the sense that they're building up Nia Jax, maybe to lose to Rhea with a hometown atmosphere. And that's a sign that they actually believe in Rhea Ripley more, but you have to put over Nia Jax strong for that to mean something. Throw it to you.
That's just it. That's what I would say to Zach and to that email. His sentiments are not uncommon. That's definitely something we've heard a lot of. A little less so, I guess, in recent weeks rather than when she first returned. But yeah, a lot of people were unhappy with that for their own reasons. Everyone was suddenly very concerned about the wrestler's safety and decided that, you know, they were not Nia Jax fans.
And saying Nia only had a job because of Roman Reigns.
Right.
She's only getting up for the Roman. And I just stay out of it. I should say I'd stay out of it. I mean, if there was – I just think if you separate yourself from that, you can – why she's getting pushed and what the purpose of this push is, regardless of whether you think she's getting chosen in part because of her family ties.
And I think – the other issue I had was with that email, I guess. not that I'm taking serious issue with you, Zach, but I have been asked to retort, and I'm doing that.
Feel free.
the clean win. If you could believe, of all things, she had a clean win, where would we be if she did not? Like, if that was
right.
If she cheated to get that victory, then we're really not looking at much of anything here. It's the fact that she beat Becky Lynch, of all people, clean with her finisher that has her as this serious threat. I think that's great. I mean, that's what makes this, you know, where we are right now.
I agree. All right. Well, Zach, I appreciate your point of view. Anything else you want to say about Becky, Nia, or Rhea before we turn to a different topic?
I thought there was a caller on the post show about a month or so ago. It was an episode I was listening to. I wasn't actually on. I think it was Brad who was talking about the cadence that Becky Lynch uses in her interviews and how it's kind of soured him on her a little bit. I'm a big Becky fan. I'm not soured on her in any way, but I did start noticing it more after Brad had pointed it out. I think it was Brad had pointed out the way she speaks in third person constantly. She doesn't talk like a regular person would talk. And I felt like she got away from that for a while, heading into the War Games match and then coming out of that and then this very personal feud with Nia Jax. But I thought she had a hint of that again in her backstage interview tonight, you know, where she was talking more about the man and what the man intends to do. And I was like, no, don't go back there. I like it more when you're talking like somebody who's really angry at the person they want to fight. So that was the only thing I noticed there with her. But, not the biggest issue in the world.
Sure, yep. All right, well, let's go to JB in Jacksonville next. Wade and Jeff, hope you gents are well. My question is about CM Punk and his promo to start the show, as well as his promo style in general since his return. Obviously, Punk being back in the short term has been a boost to WWE, but it's really been sticking out to me how out of place and borderline awkward the meta and insidery approach feels in a 2024 WWE that seems red hot because it finally moved away from this trope. When he smiled ear to ear and told Drew he might shave Drew's head and put him in the Straight Edge Society, the crowd is half quiet or politely reacting. It's understandable why, because that stuff might as well be 100 years ago. It kind of reminds me of when the NWO collectively returned to WWE and tried to play the cool guy in the room, but just kind of felt like the old-timers blowing into the wind. WWE seems too mainstream at the moment for Punk to be subjecting big audience to dirt sheet talk when storytelling finally put their business in growth mode after 15 years of decline. Punk also sucked a lot of oxygen out of the room like he did in AEW. Remember 5 minutes ago when all anyone could talk about was how hot LA Knight was? With that observation out of my way, I would be curious to hear how you think Punk is doing 6 weeks in and how you think his character fits in with the 2024 WWE style. And P.S., do you think it was being played straight or as a joke when Punk proudly said in his promo that when it comes to backstage matters, he liked to lead by example? I laughed out loud. Thanks, and everyone go VIP. I was just listening to the old Von Erich career retrospective audio you did when the World Class DVDs came out, and it was a blast to revisit. Thank you, JB, from Jacksonville. Yeah, that mega-long, in-depth conversation with Bruce Mitchell on the history of the Von Erichs and World Class more broadly. Was put up on the VIP feed over the holidays, and highly recommend it. And if you're fascinated with that chapter of history, I think our coverage historically and is second to none. All right. So yes, I love this this email. It is something that I'm thinking about as I watch Punk, because I think there is a temptation to the CM Punk brand to exist in a very different world, a very different version of what world WWE has created. And I think JB articulated it very well. However, I think he's more negative on how they're navigating this challenge than I am. I think the Straight Edge Society thing, yeah. I mean, he's right. I thought the same thing, and you brought it up as like, where did that come from? That feels a little obscure right now, but it's fine. I mean, it's not going to drive anybody away, and it's a little wink and a nod to the audience who has that kind of knowledge and history and all that. But I didn't think it like was this great zinger that just totally worked with a big audience, and I think they have to be careful. They don't lean too much on that type of insider, or it's not even, it's just historical backstory of some of what's going on. I think they'll lose the audience if they do that too much, but I think a little bit here and there is fine. But mostly, I mean, I just think it fits the story. I was comparing what Drew did when he sort of got forced out, went to Impact Wrestling, and then worked his way back versus Punk quitting, being gone longer, taking longer to come back. The idea of locker room leaders and what Drew has accomplished, what Punk was away, what Punk still wants to accomplish. I thought it was a really interesting juxtaposition of basically the last decade for both of these top stars. Drew's considerably younger than Punk, so it makes sense Drew would have looked at him as a leader back then. And so I was hanging on their every word. I was curious to see where they were heading and how they're going to react to each other. Ultimately, I don't think Punk came across as like very much the definitive good guy and Drew the bad guy. I think Drew has his point of reference and he seems to have a reasonable view of his reality. Even if, you know, the goal is, of course, for fans to be cheering Punk and booing Drew, they're not selling out Drew's character entirely in the way in what he's allowed to say. And frankly, I think WWE knows there's some people who are going to be pro Drew and anti Punk. And they're okay with that, and they're giving those fans something that they can kind of hang their hat on in terms of, well, you know what, I'm taking Drew's side, and here's why. And I think he expressed it well with Punk. So I'm curious for your take, Jeff. Respond to JB. Respond to my response to JB. Your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I get the impression JB is not the biggest Punk fan in the world. That's how the tone of that came out to me. There were a few different shots in there, and understandable, you know. I feel like we do watch Punk kind of play out this battle within himself sometimes in these segments, and that maybe there's a lot going on in production prior to them. Maybe not. Maybe I'm totally wrong and he's just winging everything while he's out there. But it seems like we do get this a very curated version of Punk where he would maybe be prone to just go on these smart fan, as I think JB put it, sort of rambles. And touch on a lot of things that modern viewers are not that interested in seeing or hearing, but he kind of catches himself or curbs it, or like I said, it's curated to some degree. I've liked what we've gotten out of him to this point. I feel we've officially moved past the introductory period of Punk's return, and we're starting to get into some meatier segments. Mm-hmm. I know that happened with Seth a few weeks back as well, but that face-off felt more like kind of a mission statement that he was issuing at the time. And we're now at this place where Punk is mixing it up with potential foes. And for a minute there, I thought we might even be getting a match between him and Drew, which I'm glad we didn't. It didn't seem like the sort of thing. Drew shouldn't continue to fail. He needs to come out on top here and there. And that's obviously not going to happen in Punk's first match. So I think Punk's probably going to continue to appear every other week or every 3 weeks. They're definitely handling him similarly to how they handle Cody. And I think that's a good thing. I like these measured doses, and it kind of makes it so that, you know, weeks where you have The Rock and then the next week you don't, there's not this drop off because guess what? We didn't have Punk for 2 weeks and now we get Punk this week. And they're finding a way to rotate through these names that are continuing to keep people like Punk feeling like a big deal instead of just another member of the Raw roster. So I like their handling. And like I said, I think Punk battles that within himself a little bit, but he still does feel like this happier, more refreshed version of himself than we got to see for most of his AEW run. And I don't know. I continue to enjoy it. I haven't felt that he's straying too far into anything smart. I thought the Straight Edge Society stuff, like I mentioned before, I thought that was kind of fun. And I think anybody who's confronting him now that was on the roster when he was last on the roster, the conversation's going to go there. They're going to go back to the last thing they knew about him. And that wasn't the last thing, but it was up there. It was in the last couple of years of his time there. So it didn't feel completely out of left field and irrelevant to me. It felt like Drew was saying, hey, you know, remember when you were supposed to be a locker room leader all these years back, last time I really was around you. But, you know, Straight Edge Society stuff was around then too. So I don't know. I thought it worked fine. I didn't have that kind of issue. And I am someone who's on alert for that. I know the first night he came back, there were callers saying, oh, I was really hoping he was going to get into, grinding his axe with AEW and stuff like that. And that wouldn't have made any sense given where we're at with everything. But you know that he has a history of doing that. And, you know, you want to see him maintain this path he's on now and not veer into that. But you can tell the temptation is there periodically, just Punk being Punk. But I did not have that problem with anything that happened tonight.
Yeah. I think watching Punk dropped into a successful WWE with no shortage of star power. Like, Punk wasn't brought in because WWE needed a spark or they needed that depth. They brought him in because he was available and there was a feeling that, you know, who knows, maybe by saying no to Punk at first and then getting something done at the last second, maybe it was because they got Punk's price down or who knows. I mean, that's probably unlikely to ever be shared, in a authoritative, verifiable way, kind of the ebb and flow of the negotiations. But Punk was coming in without the kind of leverage that he rightfully expected that he had in AEW as someone who would take things to a new level. I just don't think 2024 Punk is going to take things to a level. I think it'll help business, but not to another level, if you kind of get that phrasing. But he's valuable, and he's a compelling figure. He's very talented. He's a star for a reason. And watching him try to fit in is from the chair I sit in and the job that I have covering wrestling this way, I continue to be intrigued. Like, I don't even think WWE really knows or Punk really knows how it's going to play out. They know he's really talented, but he is in his mid-40s. He's had some injuries. He's not going to be the athlete that he was, you know, 10, 15 years ago in his physical prime. But there's a lot of experience. There's more of a backstory. And so they're navigating kind of what did he do during these 10 years? We don't get references to UFC. It almost seems like that's just been taken off the table. Like, we don't, if, no matter what you want to say about Punk, maybe next week that'll change, or in the lead up to WrestleMania, it'll change. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we've had a reference to him like losing, you know, being a delusional loser in MMA or UFC or anything. Have we?
I don't think so. I think that's that kind of ground is reserved for The Rock and John Cena, probably.
Yeah. And good. And I don't think they should. And right. The AEW thing has been like, you can sort of decode what they're saying if you know, but if you didn't pay any attention to AEW, this is a very WWE centric story. And so where does Punk fit in? How do crowds react to him? And how does he kind of find his lane in a very crowded highway of big names who are over right now? And WWE has a lot of them. Punk is not just rising to the top as the clear top star in this company right now. I don't get that sense. And WWE's goal by bringing Punk in, I think, was when we'll talk separately about Seth and Jinder later, but Seth saying, I've never brought a title to WrestleMania event on the top of the marquee. Punk is Seth's vehicle to be someone that he thinks has a match that will be equal to Roman and Cody, presuming that that and not something with Rock is the other main event at WrestleMania. That remains to be seen and play out. And, of course, everybody's got to stay healthy. And so the goal here is get Punk out there with Drew. Drew can talk, Punk can talk, but not cool down Punk so much that the match with Seth, however they go about telling that story and getting there, does seem like a legit equal or superior main event to what Roman has. And there is a legit, you know, rivalry between Seth and Roman. You know, they weren't the tightest when they were in the Shield, and that stuff has come out. And Seth really wants to be the alpha and really wants to be a centerpiece. And he touts himself as the workhorse champion and, you know, is willing to talk about the bullet points on his resume as it compares to Roman without calling out Roman. That will come later, you know, in a different year probably. So the goal is keep Seth strong, have Seth frame himself as being a different kind of top guy than Roman, but a top guy, and then keep Punk hot enough that sort of face-to-face matchup feels like a huge deal.
Yeah.
WWE's got to figure out how to tell that story. Punk's got to play his role. And so anytime Punk is on TV right now, including sharing screen time now with Drew, you know, the goal is they still want Drew to be valuable for however much, whatever they have planned for him. But ultimately, Punk is going to be in a bigger match at Mania this year. And they want to make sure Punk feels like a big deal and isn't marginalized or doesn't wear out his welcome or doesn't seem like he's from a different era and not fitting in. And, you know, I just don't think we have enough sample size to judge strongly pro or con right now. But I think that is something they're cognizant of in everything that they do. And I think Punk too. Your thoughts, Jeff?
I think there is a mutual gratefulness between both Punk and WWE that comes through every time he's on and every time you see various things posted on Twitter or on their website or in their previews. I think Punk comes across as being grateful for the opportunity to be back there again at this stage in his career and kind of close things out, maybe even if it lasts for a couple of years, in an ideal way as opposed to the way things were winding down in AEW. And I think WWE feels, they come across as feeling kind of grateful for, I don't know, just having a healthy relationship with Punk and being able to work with him in the capacity they're working with him. So you feel that on both sides. And I have no idea what that's like backstage, but it doesn't sound like anything is going to haywire right now. It sounds like everybody on both sides is pretty happy with everything. And you could feel that when you see him, you know, cut these promos and do these segments. Let me ask you, Wade.
I'll throw in real quick. Remember your question. Yeah. But they are even, you know, Drew's like, I'm surprised you lasted this long. We got bets in the back that you would have blown things up by now. Like, they're playing off of that, but it works for what happened in WWE 10 years ago. But it also is meant to be a reference to AEW for people who are craving that and will feel sort of cheated if that isn't part of Punk's story in WWE. And so they're pulling that off. But yes, in real life so far, if there's been drama, it's been behind closed doors. And I haven't seen anything leaking, you know, that jumps out as, oh, God, this isn't going to last. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, and who are those guys that Drew is talking to backstage? As far as I know, he doesn't have any friends right now.
That's a good point, yeah.
Who's he commiserating with back there about Punk anyway?
Maybe Jinder has a strong opinion on it. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. They have a history.
Or Karrion Kross. I don't know.
Do you see Punk as the most likely winner coming out of this year's Rumble? And it feels like the most obvious to me. I guess it'd be him or Cody, but it seems like Cody's going to find a different path or end up in a different situation altogether. But it seems, especially with him telegraphing that he's going to eliminate Drew last, I'm like, okay, did we just get the finals of the Rumble this year?
Well, I think that can go, that can play in multiple ways, because if Drew eliminates Punk now, then that can set up a furtherance of their feud that then leads to Punk earning the shot at the Elimination Chamber, perhaps in a chamber match against Drew. So I think there's a path to get there with Cody just winning the Rumble. Cole really hit that note tonight, or at least twice, which is, will Cody be the first one in, oh God, decades, however many years ago. And I think he's 26 years. So will Cody be the first one to do it since Stone Cold Steve Austin win two Rumbles in a row? So that could mean it's going to happen, but it could also mean they're setting it up for Cody to have more obstacles to overcome, more hardship, and that, you know, they take Cody on this, the Cody fans on the journey into the Elimination Chamber, or they have Cody win. It's a triumphant moment, and Drew eliminates Punk, or Punk eliminates Drew, but then Drew interferes because the Rumble has dumb rules, and pulls Punk over the top rope, or they eliminate each other, whatever. I mean, so I think they set it up in two ways, and so I think they're doing a good job not telegraphing or narrowing it down where it's like, you sort of have to pretend you don't know in order to enjoy it or manufacture suspense. I think both are viable options. I think they have a preference in mind that makes sense because of the totality of what they know their plan is. And I honestly mean, you asked who I think it's going to be Cody or Punk. And I think there's paths that work both ways. Maybe, you know, by the time we get to the eve of the Rumble, I'll have a stronger opinion based on the way that they've told the story. But I think they've set it up now where there's some genuine suspense. And, you know, I mean, you add, you know, Bobby Lashley. I mean, the different people who are mentioning that they're in it, for the more casual observer, they could be like, oh, I think that guy's going to win. And they make their case because they want to be the smartest person in the room who goes against the conventional wisdom. And you, if you're WWE, you want 3, 4, 5 guys that fan, you know, at the bar, so to speak, can make his case for. And so they're building that second layer of people there too, even if, you know, realistically, I mean, it's going to be Cody or Punk, but that's fine. So there's my kind of answer, non-answer.
Yeah, fair enough.
trying to think what if there's anything else I wanted to say about this, maybe not. So let's move on and talk about the Seth and Jinder match that they set up for next week's Raw. This follows along the lines of what I said about Cody and Nakamura. It's just a squash match for Seth, the modern-day squash. You take a guy in the undercurrent who's not a top guy, but you can build up his resume enough, and they did, former champion. And he goads Seth into Seth granting him a title match. It cheapens. I mean, think of how hard all the drama of winning the Rumble or winning the Elimination Chamber in order to get a title match. Now, I get it's on the grandest stage of them all, and it is a bigger deal to get a title match that way. But it does kind of cheapen things for Jinder to get a shot against Seth next week. They advertised it as a title match, right? Or not, or is it just a grudge match?
I didn't notice it being a title match. I did not see that.
Yeah, I should check on that, because I would be more comfortable if it wasn't, but I think it was. I think they added title match stipulation to it. But nevertheless, this is going to be a chance for Seth to get a freebie win against a heel who has a resume, talked big, shared screen time with Rock last week, kind of like Austin. A social media buzz, but it's not really you who did it. And Jinder's trying to capitalize on that, as heels do. And Seth will be him, and it's just a way to get another TV main event out of their roster. And I know from talking to people in WWE, they're always looking for people internally to come up with an idea of can we get a main event out of something that people wouldn't expect. Even like the Edge farewell. You know, I mean, it was like, yeah, we have a lot of attention to a guy who's leaving. Might go to AEW, but we're okay with that. We got a main event out of it. And we're in the business of trying to have compelling main events to draw TV ratings, get big TV deals, and serve our TV partners well. So I thought it served that purpose. And, of course, Seth's going to win. But people who are not happy with it, I mean, not everything can be WrestleMania. You know, I mean, there's going to be things that are TV matches that are, you know, are set up on short term like this. So, and I thought Jinder did well in his role, building that up as sort of a short-term, you know, maybe just 2-week program Jeff, your thoughts?
Yeah, I was happy to see Jinder back again this week. I thought he was a lot of fun, unexpected fun last week, and I was glad to see that wasn't just a one-week thing for him. They, you know, it, whether or not it made any sense at the time, he is a former champion. So, you know, I think WWE is wise to utilize that for whatever they can, and it's nice to see him getting, you know, the airtime and a chance to do something. I think this is where things are a little different here than what we were talking about with Cody and Nakamura. You're not going to see Jinder attack Seth and blind him and, you know, right, badly injure him. And you're not going to see them have backstage battles for weeks on end and have it devolve into this grudge feud, this blood feud. This is more, you know, hyped up squash match back to basics. And I find that refreshing. I like confrontation. I like this matchup in that way better than I did with Cody and Nakamura for that reason. It's not being built up as a really serious thing. It's, you know, it's a chance to watch Seth get a signature win. I was sitting there listening to Seth screaming, "Take a swing, Jinder, take a swing, Jinder." And I was just thinking, like, much like last week, how I didn't expect an Awesome Truth reunion, and it kind of came up out of nowhere. I was like, how did we end up here? This is such a strange place for us to be right now.
Yes.
But when it wrapped up, I was glad they announced that they're having that match next week, because they also left it hanging a little bit. I was like, we're not really going to get that at the Royal Rumble, are we? And it makes much, much more sense as a one-off next week on Raw. So I was happy to see that advertised.
Could they do a match next week but have Seth defend at the Rumble against him still? I mean, could they try to, you know, just have that be an added match at the Rumble? I was thinking this as a two-week program, but now when you're saying they're not going to do it, made me think maybe they are. Maybe they're going to – because, you know, the title not always, but typically isn't, you know, top tier.
Sure, sure.
It's just a supporting match. Yeah.
You know, if Drew wasn't already advertised for the Rumble, I would say that some sort of three-way match between them or a two-on-one crazy stipulation match or something like that would make some sense. But yeah, that's an interesting point. Now that we're suddenly just a couple weeks away from the Rumble, Seth isn't really lined up with anyone specifically.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah.
Wow. We might be looking at Jinder Mahal for the Royal Rumble after all.
Maybe so. Maybe so. All right. Let's go to Chris from New Jersey, who says, with The Rock kind of back in the WWE universe, do you think this can be the really ready to hang up the boots for good? With Paul Levesque's way of storytelling and what Rock has to offer the business, could this be the start to what will ultimately lead to a permanent part-time schedule for The Rock? Maybe he can have a feud in between filming movies. Just think of the matches he could have after finishing with Roman. He could have a single storyline matches with the likes of Cody Rhodes, Randy Orton, Brock Lesnar, AJ Styles, Gunther, and LA Knight. I know this list is excessive, but it would certainly consume some time and keep him in the loop until his daughter Simone is able to possibly tag with him in what one would think would be a part of his final match or two. What do you think? Am I getting my hopes up, or is this a potential possibility? Well, 50-something Rock having a handful of matches in the next couple of years. Jeff, what's your initial reaction to that possible or that proposed scenario from Chris?
It doesn't seem that likely to me. It seems like everything about The Rock coming back this time around says to me that this is it. This is the big one. You know, I don't know if you have information otherwise, but I still believe we're looking at a Roman Rock headlining WrestleMania match, and I think that's kind of where this
and
ends
what
up.
And what is Cody doing instead then?
Yeah, that's the thing. I maybe involvement with Randy Orton. I'm not really sure. I still think Cody finishes his story. I still think he eventually ends up with a title. I don't think The Rock defeats Roman Reigns for the title at WrestleMania or anything like that. I just think that matchup is so big.
The next, you don't know this, but Jeff, the next email queued up is exactly this topic. So it's good to get your thoughts first. And then when we're done, I'll read the email and we'll respond even more to it.
Yeah. I think I think The Rock being at Elimination Chamber in Perth makes sense. I think Australia would get what Australia wants out of that, and that The Rock would actually appear on the show. But that seems like it would be the ideal time for The Rock and Roman to go face-to-face for the first time, maybe to have a contract signing. Maybe, you know, I don't see them squaring off, you know, verbally against one another on a random episode of SmackDown. I think The Rock, having The Rock at this stage is too special for that. So that seems like the place to set things up and then have things go down at WrestleMania. I just don't see how you have The Rock and you have this specific matchup after years of working towards getting it from what we've heard and then burn it off at Elimination Chamber. That doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, no, I get that. I mean, the idea is if they're committed to Cody and Roman and Cody winning at WrestleMania in order to not wait too long and lose the opportunity, give Cody the big stage, the big moment to finish his story, if they were committed to it, you don't want to say no to Rock if he goes, hey, I'm available in February. I'll go to Australia for a big stadium. That you know, Perth wants me. They're paying big bucks, and let's do it. Let's elevate the show. You don't say no to it, even if it does seem like, wait a second, Rock Roman's happening, and it's not a WrestleMania, not a SummerSlam. If it works, I have certain matches where you're like, maybe that should have been safe for WrestleMania. This isn't, you know, in the same category in certain ways, thankfully. But I don't think you say no to it. But people are going to be like, wait a second, how is this not WrestleMania? And then, you know, that's a challenge for Cody. But I think Cody's up for it. I don't think Cody's like worried about Punk being around overshadowing him either.
Right. I think the outcome of Roman versus Cody would be far more up in the air in anybody's guess than the outcome of Roman versus The Rock. So Cody does have that working in his favor if they're really wanting to make the main event special beyond it being simply The Rock versus Roman, because no one thinks The Rock is going to come in and win the title and you know, go on to have matches from there. So that would be the only thing I could think of that would make it so that maybe that wouldn't be a Mania main event, but
I want to go back to that topic with you, but I want to first cover the specific topic of the email, which is, do you think Rock, beyond whatever happens the next few months with him, that he has other matches? Is this the beginning of him being kind of a part-timer? And, you know, are you intrigued with Rock against the heel Gunther or Rock against LA Knight somehow, or maybe there's some mix and match tag matches here? You know, he listed Cody, Randy, Brock, Styles, Gunther, LA Knight. Your thoughts on that aspect of Chris's email?
Now, see, that's where the thing we were just talking about kind of comes into play, because if Rock actually is going to battle Roman Reigns at Elimination Chamber, I don't think then he just disappears, not with WrestleMania a month away. I think they find a way to keep him around for a month and get him involved in something else, you know, maybe even something like, you know, a tag team match, maybe him and Jay versus Jimmy and Solo or something of that nature. Or, you know, you throw Jinder that bone and give him his WrestleMania moment against The Rock, and he finally gets the opportunity for his revenge. I think if The Rock and Roman happen at Elimination Chamber, then they find a way to keep Rock around and do something else at Mania. I don't making much sense for him after WrestleMania. I don't know why he would continue to do that. I think he's at a different place than even John Cena was a few months ago when he became a regular on SmackDown during the writer's strike again for a while. Rock's not really in that position. He's not quite at that age. And he has a career being one of the top names in Hollywood to get back to. So I couldn't see him sticking around and popping up at various PLEs and occasional episodes of Raw. I think we should enjoy the ride we're going to get out of him over the next 8 weeks now, because that's what we have him for.
Yeah. So let's get to the email I keep mentioning here. And this is George who says, hi Wade. First, thank you so much for the excellent coverage of all things pro wrestling. And it's my first email, and I wanted you to weigh in on Rock's placement for WrestleMania season.
And I'm so sorry. We already took the wind out of it.
Well, maybe not. Let's see what he has to say here. He goes, I would be crazy. It would be crazy to not have Rock versus Roman at WrestleMania. This is clearly the best choice. A fresh match. And also, people are worried about Cody completing his story. So what about the bigger, more lucrative story of the Bloodline. The card should be Punk versus Seth Night 1, Rock versus Roman Night 2. Have Randy turn on Cody for a Mania match. We already saw Cody and Roman last year. No one needs that to be run back. Cody can absolutely win the title, but let's do it at SummerSlam. That's accomplishing two things at once, giving Cody his title win, and doing Rock versus Roman for an epic Mania. Also, it's putting another body in front of Cody for a notch on his belt and making Roman the true and boss as the undisputed head of the table. Give us an epic fresh match that won't be able to occur down the line, or at least under these circumstances. Cody will be fine. They've proven in the past year the long-term narrative works for him. Cody is good, but come on, Matt. Compared to The Rock, main event Cody needs to take a back seat for now. Also, I don't think it's a good idea to have Rock to put The Rock versus Roman on in Perth. The time frame doesn't match. You don't force your fan base to get up early to watch Rock in WWE. You use Rock to pull back lapsed fans and to put a bow on Triple H's first full Mania. Full disclosure, I hate when they give Mania matches to Saudi Arabia because of the time frame as well. If you want to do that matchup, do Rock and Jay versus Roman and Jimmy or something like that. Roman and Rock is clearly the biggest and best main event they could do. Bloodline storyline is greater than Cody finishing his story. Side note's related enough, I'll read it. Side note, I wonder how AEW's feeling after thinking that we revealed the devil and we have our own Samoan, who everyone will be talking about. The media cycle belongs to us. Meanwhile, Triple H, hold my beer, Steph, and I don't even drink. Thank you for reading my email. Big ups to the whole PW Torch family. I went VIP right when the initial Vince ousting happened because I couldn't wait to hear your thoughts, and I haven't looked back since then. Everyone go VIP. Thank you, George. Welcome. I appreciate the endorsement at the end. PWTorch.com/goVIP for people who want to follow in George's footsteps and never look back. PWTorch.com/goVIP. Okay, so this we didn't steal his thunder because I think he brought up a lot of good points here for us to follow up on. One, there's a chance that what Perth gets is Rock and Jay against Roman and Jimmy. And then Rock comes back at SummerSlam. And Cody gets a story at Mania. There's also what the case that George is making, a fervent, strong opinion, which is whatever you do in Perth, Rock and Roman should be the WrestleMania main event. It's a WrestleMania match. It belongs at a WrestleMania, not any other show. He's got a point. So you can do that. You can still do a tag match in Perth and give Perth Rocks to Rock. And I've talked about, Randy and Cody have a history, and Cody and Randy could make sense. And then Cody ends up getting his title win at SummerSlam. So he finishes the story on the, one of WWE's other, mega branded shows. I disagree with George that it's as obvious that Cody finishing a story is beneath a Rock Bloodline storyline, in part because as good as Roman is telling stories in the ring and Rock is, Rock's not wrestling much these days. Cody is. Cody's in his prime. Rock is not. And so from a match quality standpoint or just, maybe Rock being a little rusty in building this thing up, is he going to be fully invested in really getting into this storyline and raising himself to the in the pro wrestling realm, the succession level of dialogue and week-to-week drama, or is Rock not really interested in that, and Rock is going to be more interested in, I'm going to be Rock, I'm going to tell my funny lines, and, I'll come in briefly to do my thing. It'll be fun. But he kind of looks at it not as beneath him, but not the be-all, end-all of how he, where he's just going to immerse himself in it. And if that's the case, and that might be the reality, maybe Cody is a more compelling story because Cody can actually be a bigger, better, more immersive, consistent part of building or telling that story in the build of WrestleMania. So there's a lot of thoughts that I have, Jeff, on that email. Grab on any of that and respond.
Given The Rock's background, his history, his bloodline, I don't see a situation where he's not taking a return seriously. I think of any former wrestler, celebrity, turn celebrity to come back to wrestling, The Rock of all people would understand the significance and importance of main eventing a WrestleMania match. So I wouldn't worry about him not being committed to such a thing. I think George's main point of, that being the match that should headline WrestleMania, I agree with everything he had to say about that. Where I do disagree, similarly to you, is where it involves Cody. He mentioned that nobody wants to see that rematch for WrestleMania, to which I would strongly disagree. I think many people would like to see that. I think before The Rock became a viable option as a WrestleMania opponent, we had spent the better part of the past year gearing up for that, with subtle nods by Cody and occasionally by Paul Heyman along the way that told us, hey, don't take your eyes entirely off the ball. This is where we're heading in 8 months. This is where we're heading in 6 months. This is where we're probably heading in 4 months. I think this is a sudden fork in the road that wasn't necessarily anticipated by anyone, and they're going to do the best they can with that now, whether that is, you know, find a different way to utilize Rock or go with the obvious and go with the biggest main event they could put together, which would be Rock and Roman, and find something suitable for Cody. And also, you know, there's nothing about Rock and Roman squaring off at Mania that makes it so that Cody can't finish his story. His story can continue. You know, his story can continue for another 6 to 8 months. It could take us right up to that point we'll be at around SummerSlam, where Roman is up against breaking Hulk Hogan's record. And I think that's worth every bit as much as a WrestleMania main event and a WrestleMania win. There's nothing about his story that says it has to be in the main event of WrestleMania. So that can come up another time, I think. But I would only disagree with saying that that's a match that no one wants to see, because obviously a lot of energy has been put into that, and there's a lot of interest in that match.
Yeah. Well, what about, I mean, if Rock is going to come back for multiple matches, would you be satisfied, and do you think the fan base of WWE would be satisfied with, let's say, Rock and Jay against Roman and Jimmy, or Roman and Solo? Or maybe you add in LA Knight or someone else to the mix, and you do a six-man, and Rock doesn't have to carry a whole singles match, because maybe he just physically doesn't want to do that, doesn't want to risk an injury that leads him, you know, limping around a movie set or having to delay things for whatever is on his agenda later in the year. So let just, again, it could be all kinds of reasons for it. So he does a 2-on-2 or 3-on-3 match. Then at WrestleMania, it's actually a grudge match, Rock against Solo, and it's a real attempt for Rock to come in and elevate Solo and give him this big WrestleMania moment. It's second from the top, but they are confident on night one or night two that the actual main event, Punk Seth or Roman Cody, will be able to follow it just fine. But Rock is on WrestleMania, but it doesn't disrupt their two world title matches, and it gives Solo almost a career-defining moment, even in losing, if that's the case. And then they have Rock, Roman, that they can still play that card, but they save it for SummerSlam. And so you get Rock in Australia. You get Rock at Mania. You don't disrupt Mania, but Rock's still part of it. It's part of a story, and the Rock story lasts 8 months, and it culminates at SummerSlam. Does that scenario solve a lot of the issues that you and others might have with Rock and Reigns seeming like it's too important to have to not put it on a major show when they finally wrestle one-on-one?
I like the idea of a tune-up match at Elimination Chamber, particularly a tag match or a six-man match that raises the profile of everyone involved and leaves them better off for having been involved in a match with The Rock. I think that's great. I think Jey Uso benefits greatly from being on even ground with The Rock as his tag partner in a match. I think Solo getting a lot of his spots in against The Rock in a match like that does a lot for him. I think it would elevate Jimmy just to be a part of such a match. So that's an option for Elimination Chamber. All that said, I don't see The Rock coming out on Raw last week and specifically calling out Roman with the head of the table comment that he made, if that's not where we're going for WrestleMania. That he could have chosen his words much differently. He could have veered into having issues with the bloodline and, you know, made comments about his own bloodline. What he did was made a direct at Roman Reigns at the head of the table. So I don't see how we go from that and then scale it back next week or the week after that and all of a sudden rephrase it and be like, well, you know, eventually that. But for now, you know, he's going to go to the biggest show of the year and mix it up third from the top in a tag match. I don't see that happening.
Yep, fair enough. Anything else you want to mention on that email or Rock or WrestleMania? I want to give a little bit of attention to some of the other things on the show, including the fact that trending on Twitter a few minutes ago was R-Truth's nickname or confused version of Dominic, thinking that he's two people.
Yes, well, I'm more than happy to get into that. That sounds great. I think we touched on everything that needs to be with this subject for right now. I really like those emails. I think those raise interesting questions for sure. And I'm glad to see that I'm far from the only person sitting out here thinking it's got to be a Mania match. So that's
right. Cool. Yeah, of course. Yeah. And by the way, anyone who's listening to our live stream and you want to chime in, I'm keeping an eye on the switchboard, and you can give us a call and push 1-347-215-8558. Feel free if you've got an opinion or something you want to chime in on, feel free. So I mentioned the before this season we're in now and Punk's return and Rock appearing, the Judgment Day was sort of the centerpiece of Raw. And tonight, you know, we talked about Rhea Ripley confronting Nia Jackson. That was fun. But we also have the kind of lower card JD McDonagh, R-Truth stuff, and then the tag team situation with Balor and Priest. Did talk about how you felt about R-Truth this week and brought in and out to how you feel about his character overall. I feel like I'm supposed to feel guilty for enjoying R-Truth, and I understand that argument, but I think for the role he plays, I get a kick out of it. I enjoy it, and I think it's in the proper place on the card. He's feuding with the proper person, and they've set up a match for next week that plays off of this with Truth and Miz against JD and Dom. Excuse me. Yeah. So just talk about that, Jeff. What do you think about that, including R-Truth's play on Dominic's name?
Yeah. Yeah,
Nick Mysterio, by the way, thinking they're two people, yes.
I really think we're getting a prime example of what happens when Vince McMahon produces a comedy segment and what happens when Triple H produces a comedy segment or a comedy character for that matter. Because I did not always feel so favorably about R-Truth and his shtick. You know, I felt for years it had kind of run its course and was kind of tired. And when he first returned, I thought, oh, okay, we're going to, you know, have months more of that sort of thing. And it's been a surprise how enjoyable it's been, actually. The montage tonight, I could have done without the baby versions of Judgment Day. But other than that, I really enjoyed it.
I enjoyed that.
When it was being played a bit more straight at the start, I thought that was where the humor really lied initially. And then there were the babies with the beards and the jackets and stuff. I was like, okay, here we go. But we are definitely in, like I was mentioning, a new era where something on WWE programming that's meant to be funny is actually funny. And that was enjoyable. And man, the crowd reaction. I mean, they were great all night, but the reaction that Truth got when he was out there was just, wow. Like that was kind of what really opened my eyes to, this is a really good crowd tonight, but I think he had so much to do with that. I don't know where they're going with this. I feel like they probably weren't going anywhere initially. Like maybe it was meant as a 1 or 2 week thing that then got legs thanks to Truth and reactions he was getting for it. And now they have something that they have to do something with. I'd like to hear where you think it might be going. I see a lot of folks online speculating that it's, you know, basically saying that it's Sammy and the Bloodline 2.0, but I do not see that at all.
No.
This is just its own separate thing, and it's only sort of serious. But obviously, as we saw after his interference in that match, it's going to get a bit more serious because, you know, now Priest is mad, and he wasn't so mad earlier in the night. I personally would like to see more of maybe a DX Mick Foley situation where the group is slowly won over and eventually end up being de facto faces because they've embraced Truth. And like I said, Priest actually did seem to be taking a shine to him. So I was thinking maybe we'd get that scenario in part, like Truth helps progress the fissure between Priest and the rest of the group. But Priest seems pretty on board with fixing the problem that has become R-Truth now too. And then for his part, you know, Truth was in the ring celebrating with Miz afterwards. So you're looking at that going, well, I think maybe he does know what he's doing. But, you know, live, laugh, and love. That's what they always say. So,
so you mentioned that it started off serious. I thought the truth deadpanning that that his birth and the doctor holding him in his arms is a day he'll never forget was awesome. Like just that deadpan
great.
Delivery.
Yeah.
You don't remember, you know, you obviously have no long-term memory of your birth. And the doctor holding you and what he said to you and that he looked him in the eyes and told the doctor, as a baby just born, someday I'm going to be in the judgment day. I mean, it's just so absurd. And he delivers it so deadpan. I don't know. Yeah. And I do think there's a portion of the crowd that enjoys this. And I think WWE is going to have this kind of thing in their show, and they've decided that part of their audience likes this. And I think they're right. And comedy's hard and it doesn't always work, but there's something about truth, even if it, and I get the framing of it, the negative framing of it. And I'm taking that into account. And when I say, you know, I think I'm supposed to feel guilty sometimes getting a kick out of him, but this is what he cracks people up behind the scenes. Like they're not like exploiting somebody who doesn't want to play this role. Like this is kind of who he is. He cracks people up, you know, doing, you know, just saying ridiculous things with a straight face So they're amplifying something about why people who like him enjoy his company. Joe.
Right. And I think that's sort of what I was picking out a little bit when I was talking about the difference between a Vince McMahon produced R-Truth and a Triple H produced R-Truth is I feel like we do get more of his genuine sense of humor in this. He has more freedom to kind of be himself, and that's what is winning a lot of people over, myself included, whereas for so many years we were getting, you know, the funny thing about Truth is that he was so dumb, you know, he would get involved in a hardcore match thinking it was a heavyweight title match, and he would forget and think it's 1999 and he's fighting Bob Holly or whatever the very unfunny things that they had him doing for so long were. And now he's getting a chance to be himself more in this way that still is comedy, but it's actually kind of funny. And, you know, everybody involved is clearly enjoying it too. And it's always fun to watch the people doing these things enjoy themselves. So, yeah, I don't know. I like this version. And like I said before, I wasn't expecting to think much of it when it first began. But
And I am not worried about this being a Sammy thing. I mean, this is way lower end. Maybe I'll be proven wrong. But to me, this feels like a fun little sidebar thing they're doing for comedy. Sammy it grew into something much more than that. R-Truth is not Sami Zayn. I mean, there's parallels. I get the parallels, but there's significant differences between them too. And I misspoke earlier. I said it was Dom and JD taking them on, but yeah, Priest and Balor are going to, I mean, we'll see where that goes. It probably isn't the end of anything when they face Miz and Truth, but Miz and Truth reuniting too, you know, after when was the Cena Rock Survivor Series match?
Oh yeah, yeah. That was 2011. I was at Madison Square Garden. I was actually at that, and was I remember being feeling a little disappointed at the time that was the big match we were getting. But that was
And you know what? We circle back to Rock now, and the fact that, you know, Rock and Cena alone teaming was the draw, and the opponents were the Washington Generals. It didn't matter to the Harlem Globetrotters. It didn't matter as much. You were just there to see, wow, look at this match. And that might be what we see this year too, a little bit, in terms of Rock's in a tag match to begin with, and they build to the singles match. So they've done it before. They might do it again.
Of course, that was at Survivor Series, not WrestleMania.
Yes. Well, right. And so I'm thinking Rumble and Elimination Chamber set up eventually maybe a SummerSlam Rock-Reigns match, and there's a significant singles match, Rock versus Bloodline, maybe solo before that. But again, talk to me in 2 days. I'll give you a different scenario. And that's what's fun. And I am hoping that, spoilers don't get out about, you know, oh, here's what the plans are. And someone just decides to, you know, show off news reporting where it's like, you know, spoiler alert, but I'm going to tell you what I've heard. And someone leaks exactly what's planned. If people can do what they want, I just hope that doesn't happen here. I hope that WWE keeps it a small circle so that we can just see it play out and not know. You know, I don't want to know who wins Survivor before the season's over. I don't want to know the payoff to Succession and the season finale before it happens. And wrestling is closer to that than anything. So hopefully that stuff is protected. But that WWE does a good job as far as that goes, because I think people have different possibilities in their mind. Same thing with the Rumble and who wins a Rumble. It's going to be a lot more fun to experience it live than to have someone trying to earn a couple thousand dollars for their boss or themselves with some, you know, not clickbait, but a spoiler that ruins it for a lot of people in the day or weeks leading up to it. But
before we move away from truth really quick, I also wanted to ask you, Wade, do you think this program is damaging to Judgment Day in any way? Because that's something I see a lot of grumbling about, that it's kind of, you know, it's making them look bad. It's more of a light comedy thing for them and they should be more serious. What are your thoughts on that?
Nah, I don't think so. No. I mean, Priest just shrugging it off. Like, this is just, it's just stupid. You know, I'm Truth isn't a member. He can do his comedy. He can be delusional and a goof and a clown. It's not going to affect us. But let's see what happens next week when Priest and Balor, you know, are officially having to deal with him. But at this point, it's been mostly JD. And Priest, to me, seems like above it. You know, like, well, I'll take care of – it'll be over when I take care of him.
Right.
JD isn't able to do it. And it's playing up, you know, this JD trying to earn his keep in Judgment Day, and Priest is the problem. Prove that you belong. And JD's having trouble doing it, and that's frustrating. And fans are laughing at JD, who's the lower end of the Judgment Day, but a valuable member and takes great bumps. And, you know, he's done a really good job with body language. You can see why they've put him in this position. He has a real skill set. But he's the Buddy Roberts of the Freebirds. You know, he's the guy there to take bumps and lose. And so I think it's fine. I think Priest and Balor are staying above the fray, and certainly Rhea is too. And basically they get to act like adults in the room. And in a way they sort of seem above it and thus it not brought down, but maybe elevated because they do look like the adults in the room.
Right.
Let's see. What was I going to bring up? I had it highlighted and now I already did cover that. So let's see. Well, let's talk about the women's tag team match. Chelsea Green and Piper Niven challenging Carter and Chance. Carter and Chance win in 10 minutes. I got a kick out of Chelsea Green trying to mimic what Piper Niven was doing to warm up and getting frustrated in the little thing before the commercial break. There's things Chelsea Green does well, and her chemistry with Piper Niven has been a pleasant surprise, and Piper Niven has gotten to show some range here too. Did you like the match? Did you like the setup? Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I thought it was a really fun match. I hope we're not seeing the start of a breakup between Chelsea and Piper based on that finish. I think, you know, they were a better pairing than I think anyone ever expected them to be. And honestly, I think they elevated the women's tag titles with their run to some degree. Not necessarily through a series of amazing matches or anything, but just the way they carried the belts and the way they were portrayed. You know, prior to them, the tag titles were only relevant when they were being used to progress the Becky Trish feud, I think. And, you know, following up Green and Niven with Carter and Chance, I mean, we're now getting some entertaining matches, and suddenly I feel like the titles actually, you know, mean a little bit when they really have been the set of titles in the company that nobody really thought about at all. It's the only title that the company's been comfortable having change hands somewhat regularly on television. And suddenly, you know, Carter and Chance are on every week and defending them every week. And even though they were all watching the television in a slightly sideways way, we had a whole room full of challengers watching. It was better than it's been, I'll say that. I still feel there's like a camera angle you could use to show everyone watching the screen directly head on and then show the screen so you could see what they're watching or something like that. That would make it a little less bad. But
well, as TV technology improves and the sharp angle of a really high-end, you know, QLED TV allows you to see what's happening on the TV without it just, you know, getting all fuzzy or dark, I think we're getting more realistic angles as TV technology increases to serve that purpose that you're talking about, which is showing the faces of the people, but also what's on the screen.
Yeah. I don't think it's likely that we end up getting a one-on-one tag title match at Mania. I think given all the effort they're putting into that division right now, that would be a really cool payoff for all involved, and I think it would be a really fun match. That said, with everybody watching like this and there being, you know, four or five viable options as far as challengers go, we're probably headed towards, you know, a big multi-person match at Mania. But it'd be a feather in the cap of the champs and of those tag titles to even get that on the show at this point. So, yeah, I like the match tonight. I like what they're doing with the division.
Jey Uso, is he getting lost in the crowd by saying he wants to win a singles title this year and Bronson Reed is the person confronting him? Or is Jey a big enough star that this is a good way to elevate Bronson Reed and, you know, sort of a sidebar feud, kind of like Jinder Seth and Shinsuke and Cody, where Jey does something just kind of occupy himself so he's not just off television, but, you know, things can heat up for him a little bit down the line. What do you think of him declaring this year his New Year's resolution is a singles title and then Bronson Reed saying, you got to go through me?
Yeah. 10-19 was the time we finally got some Jey Uso on this week's Raw, which was kind of surprising. I don't love that new shirt either, the fuzzy yeet. It's very painful on the eyes. I do think that we might be getting into some potentially hazardous territory with Jey. Like he's really only a few months into establishing himself as a legit main event player, and I believe the company sees him that way. But between the match against Imperium last week and now, you know, maybe a budding rivalry with Bronson Reed, I feel like we're on this tightrope where it's like, is Jey now elevating lower card guys, or is he beginning to be defined down? It's a really delicate time, and it could go either way. I was looking over the monthly merchandise sales numbers earlier today. It's, you know, one of the many reference points used for the Rocket Straps column. And for the month of December, Jey finished third in the company behind only Cody and CM Punk. And he's actually moved ahead of LA Knight in sales. And Knight has dominated the monthly sales charts for at least the last 6 months. So it's no small feat. So I think Jey is very much still a priority and a part of the main event picture on Raw. I feel we're at a point where things involving him need to be handled very carefully. You know, a program with Bronson Reed, that'll be fun. That'll make for some good matches. I do like Bronson Reed. I like what they've done with him over the last 6 months. They brought him up from being someone who I didn't really think about to being someone who has, you know, good matches, a fun presence, and could be elevated and made into something more. I just don't know if Jey's the right guy to do that right now.
Right, because Jey beats Bronson, and then what has Bronson Reed proven? Or Bronson beats Jey, and what? You know, I'm a fan of Bronson Reed, but do you really want him? Are you ready to elevate him at the expense of Jey? So it's an intriguing situation. Kofi Kingston, Ludwig Kaiser. I thought they followed up deliberately with what happened last week with Giovanni Vinci getting knocked out legit, and Colt said he'll be gone for a few weeks because of it. And then Kofi gets knocked out with a chair. Looks like he does legit, sells it. But, of course, Kaiser then, you know, picks him up and tosses him around. And I thought Kaiser's body language and facial expressions were great. He's like, all right, I'll leave. And he goes through the ring. And then, boom, sprints back and kicks Kofi. It's fun seeing Kofi not in the cartoon New Day gear and in some different shorts and with a different look. So this is interesting. I think Kaiser has a bright future as a borderline top tier guy in WWE, and I think they see him that way. And I thought tonight was a good showing for him, and I think Kofi's a good person to be working with at this point. So the double count didn't bother me at all. WWE doesn't do it very often. I don't know. I'm not even ruling out maybe Kofi is supposed to get in the ring sooner. The ref is just like, dude, you weren't here in time. I had to keep counting. It's no big deal. I mean, they're furthering a feud. This wasn't a match that they, you know, advertised where people needed to know an outcome. You know, this was more about advancing the feud. And so, I mean, I'm for being critical of cop-out finishes where someone books a big match, a booker books a big match, and they just don't give the fans a satisfying outcome. But that doesn't mean you can't ever do them. It's natural there will be double countouts. It's natural there will be situations like this. And I thought this was a good use of that. Jeff, your thoughts?
Yeah, that spot after the match where Kaiser launched the chair at Kofi, that got an audible, oh, my God, out of me, which doesn't happen often.
I was acting.
Yeah.
Michael Cole was like, oh, my God. Like, you could tell he was real up close, too. I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, Kaiser hit multiple shots on Kofi during and after the match that if they didn't actually hurt Kofi, they were done very well. I mean, they looked stiff. For two guys, particularly Kofi, who are really overdone with the comedy bits these days, it was really surprising and fun to see that post-match brawl. And, yeah, There was a guy in the front row during that brawl wearing a bright yellow shirt with a big angry Bart Simpson face on it that I thought just fit the vibe perfectly. Mm-hmm. Enough for me to make a little note of him because I just thought that was, that got a chuckle out of me. Not typically a fan of screaming promos, but I thought Kaiser having that intensity backstage afterwards really worked for him mm-hmm. too. I thought it was, at first it was funny that Wade Barrett speculated that Kaiser was looking to avenge the injury to Giovanni Vinci because, you know, I've been watching those two team on a weekly basis for a while now, and I just don't think they have that kind of relationship. But then after that brutal kick outside of the ring just before they cut to the break, you know, Ludwig, he straight up says, that was for Vinci. So, yeah, I guess that's why Wade Barrett gets paid the big bucks. I actually do think they'll most definitely be playing up Kaiser having to carry the load while Vinci's out once the whole group is back together again, though. Yeah, Kaiser, he's going to be a fantastic singles performer one day. It was great to see him in that role tonight. And, you know, that said, I know you've mentioned in the past his potential as a babyface. I maintain I don't see that. His facials, his mannerisms are so unlikable. He's such a great, smarmy heel. Yeah. I just think he's got a lot of yardage to cover there still.
And Kaiser returning next week.
Yeah, but without Vinci, who I guess will be out for a while still.
Yeah, that's what they said. I believe it.
With that in mind, I actually do really look forward to the dynamic strictly between the two of them when it's not just a matter of Gunther coming down on both of them for their tag team exploits. Like, I think it might – I don't know. Maybe something could be unlocked between the two of them we haven't seen before.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. And, you know, Gunther might be pleased with what he's seen out of Vinci, you know, or I mean out of Kaiser coming to the defense of Vinci.
Yeah.
Like he has, you know, you took his head, I took yours, Kofi. Maybe Gunther praises him and then Kaiser just, you know, puffs his chest out. He's really proud. He got approval.
Right.
Or not. We'll see. Why weren't you there to protect your partner? I could see Gunther unfairly, you know, condemning him for things that really aren't his fault.
Yeah.
I think the last thing we didn't talk about is just Ivar and Otis, and then Tozawa confronting Ivar after he beat Otis. I don't know. There's a lot to this 4 minutes. Any thoughts on where this is? It feels like it's maybe extending longer than I would have extended it.
I am with Wade Barrett in my enjoyment of Ivar. I was surprised to find that I felt that way when he first began wrestling as a singles competitor, but I tend to enjoy Ivar's matches pretty much every time they give us one. That springboard tonight, like, oh man. And did you see the bloody nose after the match?
Yep.
Yep. Is Ivar the next Becky Lynch? I only wish.
Well, I don't think we expected to hear that on a wrestling podcast.
I only wish
Ivar the next Becky Lynch.
I'd like to see him go back to speaking in that soft regular guy voice we heard a couple months back. I think there was something really weird about how nice and normal he sounded, given like how scary he looks and how dangerous he is in the ring. So I like that dichotomy, but I love when they give us an Ivar match these days. It's, you know, much like you were saying about Truth, it's kind of a guilty pleasure of mine. And it was nice to see him get the win. I feel bad for Otis. I don't know where they could possibly be going with that. They really had something with Otis for a while there, and I can't remember the last time poor guy won a match on TV.
I know. Yeah. Well, he can be resilient. He can come back. They're not going to put him in a top spot. Anything else you want to bring up before we sign off here, Jeff?
I guess we had the opening match, Finn versus Ciampa, which, you know, I don't think we've talked about that yet.
Oh no, you know what? You're right. Yep.
Yeah, and
I thought we covered everything, and you're right, we had it.
Yeah, given the TV time limitations, I thought it delivered just fine. I was excited to see it. It was cool for what it was. I'd love to see those two go at it in more of a PLE length match, but I was happy to see both of them get that singles match. I thought the finish.
It would be nice if Gargano was on time tripping. For doing the trip on the finisher.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, Ciampa just sort of fell on top of Balor, and Gargano just sort of, like, swept his arm at feet that were already – I mean, it's just he was late, and it took something away from the match. And I don't know why they're – I mean, I know Balor's a take champ and all that, but I don't I would have been happier, just a cleaner finish. And this is a little, I mean, it's fine. I don't have a problem. They're going to do it sometimes. But the booking 101 of a, you know, challenger gets a non-title singles win to justify a little bit a tag title match.
Yeah. Do you think Gargano's timing was why we got that kind of weird reaction from Finn after the match? Like, Priest was fuming, you know, he was going into his, like, I'm really mad that you beat us kind of face. And Finn was just kind of like, I don't know, he seemed almost amused. A strange reaction of, you know, I don't know what. Maybe it had.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah.
But it was a nice, you know, it was an 8-minute match with a commercial break. I mean, there wasn't a ton to it. But
right.
Balor and Ciampa are good workers, and you know, I'm glad DIY are getting a chance to be a team on a national scale like this.
Yeah, yeah, I would like to see that story actually get a chance to play out a little further.
Yeah. Cool. Awesome. Jeff, thank you. Good conversation on Raw. I knew we had a lot we could talk about.
Yeah, this is great.
Excellent. Well, thank you everybody for listening. If you have the time and the inclination to give us a 5-star rating on whatever app you listen to us on, Apple Podcasts or otherwise, we'd love for you to do that. Maybe leave some kind comments if you what we do here. Otherwise, we'll be talking to you Wednesday night after Dynamite here on the post show. And who's my scheduled co-host? Yes, Andrew Socek coming back from the on hiatus Mike and Andrew show. So Andrew is 98% sure he'll make it. So that I'm announcing it to jinx it. I think he's close to 100%. It's going to work his schedule. So we've been trying to work out a time to get him back on. So I'm looking forward to having him on and get his updated thoughts on AEW broadly and Dynamite specifically on Wednesday night.
I'm excited to hear that too. I really like listening to Andrew.
Yes, yes. Known him forever, and it'll be great to do another show with him. It's been too long. All right, cool. Thanks, everybody, and happy New Year. I think I'm still allowed to say it, and we'll talk to y'all next time.
All right, take care.